and welcome to the Mindset Growth Academy podcast. I'm your host, Emma Gibbs-Ung. Each show, I'm going to be using a combination of interviews with incredibly inspiring people from around the world who have achieved greatness, overcome adversity, and never given up, as well as solo episodes from me, sharing my own journey as a leading mindset coach, helping to inspire, support, and guide you to create a growth mindset so you can achieve success in all areas of your life. Are you ready to bring mindset to life and create success from the inside out? Let's go. Hello and welcome back to the Mindset Growth Academy podcast. Today I'm joined by the amazing Sam Colclough. Sam is a qualified hypnotherapist and mindset coach who runs a successful online business called As Good As Your Mind. Sam is one amazing lady who I've been blessed with to have in my life. Her story is unique, at times very sad, but above all inspiring. Today, Sam is sharing with us the impact of living with someone with mental health issues has had on her life, both personally and professionally, what she did to cope with the challenges, and how she's gone on to use her experience to help and support thousands of people. As one mindset coach to another, I can't wait to find out what keeps her going and how to turn a negative situation into a truly inspiring business. Hello, Sam.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on to the show. I've been wanting to get you on here for ages, so I'm really chuffed that you're here today.
Long time coming.
Indeed. Mental health is something that we've all heard of, but it's something that we don't all truly understand, and we don't really understand the impact that it has on people's lives. And it is often misunderstood on so many levels, quite often because it's an internal illness rather than a physical illness. And so people don't always necessarily see it as a serious problem. But as you well know, and as we're about to discover, it does impact on so many different people, not just the people that are suffering with that illness, but the families that are surrounding that. Mm. I said in the introduction that obviously you have lived and dealt with someone who suffered a serious mental health issue. Obviously that lovely lady was your mum. If you wouldn't mind just starting the show, just talking a bit about your mum, her illness and the impact that that had on you.
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, touching on the first bit that you said around not seeing the mental illness as, because it's such an internalized problem, it's only now on reflection and with everything that, you know, has happened that I now truly understand the impact of mental health. It just, you know, once you fully understand how the mind works, it just gives a completely different perspective on mental health, which I'm sure you appreciate as well. But yeah, I mean, mum, you know, for want of a better word, was a very normal lady. You know, she met my dad, and she married at a young age, and she was ambitious, and she did amazing things. An incredible mum, a risk taker, all of those kind of things, for a small proportion of my life. And then at the age of 11, I think it was Christmas 1999, actually, was the last time that I remember her being, like I say, normal, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
Because that year is when things just went downhill. And I can remember not my dad at the time, but a stepdad, my mum had remarried, shouting at me at Christmas saying, come downstairs, you know, we need to take your mum to hospital. And that was the first overdose of many to come. And I think I was even younger than, I was about 9 or 10 when that first happened. And James, my stepdad at the time, was just shouting, saying, you know, do everything you can to keep your mum awake. So I was sat in the back of the car and I was having to slap her face and do all of these kind of things. And then she went into hospital. She had her stomach pumped, all of those kind of things. And obviously at such a young age, you don't understand what's going on or why it's happening. And life kind of dramatically went downhill for her from that point. You know, she ended up divorcing the man, James, that she was with. We ended up moving to emergency accommodation, and all of those kind of things. And then at the age of 11 is when I officially became a young carer for her, because she was diagnosed with manic bipolar depression and schizophrenia.
Right.
And you, again, you're 11 years old, you don't know what the term young carer means. You know, you've got a mum that you love and adore that is suffering beyond comprehension. So that's when the journey really, really started for me. And, you know, from the age of 11, my life was, I'd like to say, you know, I had a reasonable childhood. You know, my mum did the very, very best that she could with where she was at. But, you know, she would be trying to take her life 4 or 5 times a year, maybe 6. So, you know, I'd be coming home from school and it would be roulette as to whether she was having a day where all the curtains were shut and she was in bed, she wasn't socializing, dinner wasn't done, all of those kind of things, to days where she felt reasonably okay and she'd be, you know, mum pottering around doing the dinner, doing the cleaning and all of those kind of things, to coming home from school and either not coming home to mum because she'd already been admitted to hospital having taken an overdose, or coming back to my mum having taken an overdose and me then having to do the things that I needed to do in order to make sure she was looked after. So yeah, it was an incredible stressful journey, and that is really what happened year after year after year for as long as I could remember. I didn't, you know, complete all my GCSEs and all of those kind of things. I didn't go to school as much as what I could because I was kind of taking care of my mum. And even into my early 20s, you know, it was, she was still very, very dependable on me, you know, very dependent. So, you know, I'd finish a hard day's work and I'd have to go home and I'd have to care for her, or I'd go and have to pick her up or do shopping for her and all of those kind of things. So yeah, it had a huge, huge impact on me for many reasons. But yeah, incredibly difficult seeing someone that you love suffer so deeply.
And at such a young age.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of pressure to put on anybody. And obviously, the last thing she probably wanted was to put that pressure on you as well. And so how did you cope with that? Because to go to school and then to come back not knowing what you're going to be coming back home to is really a lot to take on at any age. And so what were your coping mechanisms during that time?
It's a really difficult question to answer, purely because at that age, I don't think you think about it in that way. I don't think you think, right, how am I going to cope with this day now? I think as a child of that age, you just come home and you deal with the situation as it is, and then you go to sleep and you wake up and it's a new day. I think as I got older, my coping mechanism was, I've seen someone that I love so much be in that situation. I don't ever want to be in that situation myself.
Yeah.
So there's no option for me other than to keep going. You know, keep doing the things that I'm doing, keep looking after her, keep taking action, because I wasn't ever going to put myself in being in that situation and allowing whatever had taken hold of her to take hold of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did it impact your relationship with her?
Oh, that's a minefield. Oh God, in so many ways. You know, resentment, anger, frustration. It certainly had a detrimental impact on how I choose to view the world in my, you know, later years. You know, my self-worth, all of those kind of things. You know, how could I be lovable, how could I be important if the one person that's supposed to stay around and care for you can do those things, potentially leaving you motherless? What's wrong with me? Why aren't I good enough or important enough? All of those kind of things. Resentment towards her, in the sense that, you know, she brought me into this world. It wasn't my choice to come into this world. So therefore then you have an obligation to be, you know, the best parent that you can be. the resentment around kind of, I already was trying to create something for my life. I was trying to live again, want for a better word, a normal life by holding down a full-time job and having boyfriends and stuff like that. Yet I was always having to do all of those extracurricular things for her as well. And frustration, I suppose, from the point of, even with the mental illnesses, she was such an incredible woman. Like, on her good days, she was creative, she was energetic, she was entrepreneurial, she was like an incredible woman. And I was very frustrated at her then, obviously not having the knowledge that I have now, that she couldn't snap out of it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the I think the terms that, you know, gets bandied around quite a lot with mental illness is like, just snap out of it, like do something. And yeah, that was pure ignorance on my part, thinking yeah, that something so severely debilitating to her was something she could just snap out of it. Because if she could just snap out of it, she would have done for the sake of me, for the set herself and all of those kind of things. So yeah, it changed. And I suppose it also changed our relationship in the sense of, I was the mum, she was the daughter. In those situations. And then I found it very, very difficult then, when she was having her good days, that she'd then want to become mum again. And then I'm like, whoa. Yeah. Like, that's a really, really difficult transition to get your head around, is having that kind of role reversal 24/7.
Totally. I mean, you touched on such a valid point there, in that your immediate thoughts were to, you know, to snap out of it. And then when you see them having good days, you're like, well, why can't you be like that more often? And it is that lack of understanding that we all have, unless you are in it and living with someone or living in it yourself, that we just don't understand, because it's not necessarily always 100% a constant thing. The illness is there. There are triggers that trigger it off more than others, but then you do get glimpses of that normal person, as you've said, and that's where the confusion and the frustration and the anger, I suppose, sort of stems from. Mm-hmm. How did you deal with those emotions? Because they're hard emotions, especially at an impressionable age that you were in your early adulthood as well, because, you know, you want to explore your life. You wanted to, you know, go and have a career and create a life for yourself, as you said, but you still had these responsibilities on your shoulders. So was there an outlet that you had that kind of helped you to escape or to cope, or any which way?
No, I don't. I think I just threw myself into everything and anything. You know, I never turned to, I never turned to alcohol. That's a complete lie. You know, from the age of 14, 15, I relied on drugs and alcohol quite heavily. Mm. And then I think I got to the age of 16, 17 and kind of saw those that I was growing up with. And then I was just like, no, I don't really want this life. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to kind of move away from that. So, and then I suppose my outlet was, right, you know, I want to create a life that I enjoy. So that's working hard, that's earning money, doing all of those kind of things. And just, I suppose, taking her weaknesses and making them my strength, seeing her in that way and never wanting to be that way, so doing everything that I could to be the complete opposite, you know. And that's usually the case when it comes to conditioning or what we've seen growing up, whether our parents are alcoholics, whether, you know, we've, you know, been beaten up, or all of those kind of things, we usually tend to try and do the absolute opposite to what they've shown us. And I think that was it. I've become very career focused, I became very driven, and I suppose in those early or later years, should I say, I just carried a constant air of frustration with her. Like, I loved her dearly, and we, you know, we'd still find glimpses of laughter, but the relationship was definitely strained and felt very, very frustrating most of the time. So I'd do all that I could to spend as least time as possible with her and just focus on what I needed to do. Selfishly, maybe. Yeah. Some might view that, but, you know, I had to protect my own best interests.
Totally. And that takes courage and strength to do that. to be able to say, look, I need to lead my life. I'm always there for you, but I've got to put myself first. Mm. And that, you know, again, shows what an amazing person you are and the strength that you found in that situation. I mean, what fears did you experience during that time?
What, whilst looking after her?
Well, yeah, well, that and transitioning into an adult from a young carer into an adult who still has these responsibilities.
I don't know. I think the biggest fear, and I don't think it was a fear because I conditioned myself to believe that regardless of what happened with her, I would always be protected because I put up that brick wall. I think I'd always anticipated her dying. So therefore, when she did die, it wouldn't be as painful when it actually happened. So I wouldn't say that mum actually dying was a fear because I created that belief that it wouldn't hurt me. I think the biggest fear of all that I've probably carried, not so much now because I've done a lot of work, but carried through kind of my early late 20s is I'm unlovable, mm. You know, all of those kind of things around relationship, nothing lasts forever. But yeah, it's weird though, because those kind of fears didn't debilitate me. I still took action despite of those things that were going on internally, if that makes sense.
Totally. From what you've said, you know, you made it almost your mission to lead a normal life and to never be in that position. Yeah. And that really kind of highlights when you make your goals bigger than your fears, then the goal becomes so much more achievable and you focus on that rather than on the what ifs, the buts, and everything else that goes on. So, you know, I think that's an amazing example of how that works. Definitely. Yeah. You touched on the fact that unfortunately your mum lost her life. At what stage of your life did that happen?
I was 26 and I was 5 months pregnant and about 150 miles away from my mum at the time of it happening. I'd actually relocated to Wales, but yeah, I was 26 and 5 months pregnant when that happened.
Wow, I mean, that's tough at any stage, but with that as well. What was your relationship like with her before she passed?
I think I'd done a lot of work internally, and the relationship that we had before she passed was a relationship which I wish we'd always had. Absolutely. So our relationship towards the end, I had a better understanding of, you know, why she was the way she was. It wasn't about me. We made the best out of bad situations. You know, we were very, very, very close, you know, the last couple of years before she passed away, which yeah. I'm, you know, extremely thankful for, because now I have those memories that replace the bad ones, you know.
Totally. You mentioned that you've done a lot of internal work leading up to her passing. Would you mind just sharing what that is? Because obviously I know to some level what internal work means, but for those that are listening, what work really helped you to kind of understand, as you mentioned, that it wasn't about you, it wasn't your fault, it wasn't a punishment? Because quite often people think that, you know, what have I done so wrong? I just want my mum to be all right, or, you know, I want to be loved. So what did you do to kind of understand that?
I think the older that I got, and having had a few relationships prior to the man that I'm now with, who's the father of my son, I became a lot more aware of my patterns and behaviours on a conscious level. And I was becoming very aware of, I'd keep doing the same thing over and over again that was harmful to me and also harmful to my relationships. So, like, you know, the lack of trust, always feeling like I was going to be, you know, cheated on or left, or all of those kind of things. And I was like, why is that a constant thing? What is happening there? And as I started to explore that further and kind of ask myself questions and delve a little bit deeper, I realized that actually those fears and what was happening in, you know, my exterior life was a result of how mum had made me feel for so many years. And it really, the time that I did that self-development work and started to really question why I felt the way that I did is then when mum passed. And that's where the next transition happened, where I really went deep on, right, let's get this sorted now.
Because you mentioned then, obviously, you know, that you were 6 months pregnant when she passed away. How did you deal with that emotional situation, the hormonal situation? You mentioned that you had been preparing for it, or you hadn't feared it because you'd protected yourself. Did that protection work, or did it all come flooding in when she passed away?
No, nothing prepares you for losing.
No.
Losing the one closest to you, absolutely not. And the irony is, as our relationship got better and better in the later years, I'd actually started to lower that barrier, and I actually started to think, wow, you know, this is everything that we've missed out on. She's in a better place, because obviously from the age of 11 right through to my early 20s, you know, medication had changed, support had changed, all of those kind of things. So naturally she started to put herself in a position where she could deal with her illness better as well. So I'd kind of let my barriers down in the later years, thinking, all right, okay, this is, you know, this is what it should be like. And I can remember when I got the call, and she'd been put in hospital prior to that because of the issues that she was having with her stomach and stuff like that. When I got the call, I just, I can remember it so vividly, just falling to the floor, being in complete pieces. Like, nothing ever prepares you for that, no matter how much you try and put up a brick wall. And the irony is, you spend all of those years putting up your brick wall and stopping love from coming in and all of those kind of things, but ultimately it never works, because it's still going to feel just as painful.
I'm so sorry, and you can hear the emotion in your voice. So, you know, I thank you for talking so openly about it. I mean, moving on from that, with regards to sort of the emotional side, obviously you're pregnant. How did those months look once she'd passed away?
Bleak for a short period of time. That whole period in quick succession was just terrible. You know, I was 5 months pregnant. I'd just moved to a not long move to a new area. I'd started a new job. I had a lot of personal issues going on with someone that was causing tremendous amount of pain to our family home. Mum had passed away, and the company that I was working for at the time gave me a week's bereavement leave. And in that week's bereavement leave, I was expected to obviously sort all of the things out that you have to do. And I had to beg for a second week's bereavement leave in order to, you know, clear out her flat, her belongings, which I had the help of some incredible people, go and pick up her stuff from the hospital, you know, sort out her funeral, all of those kind of things, to then return back to work after those 2 weeks. And they put me on a performance review because I hadn't been doing what I needed to do in my job whilst all of that was happening. I was having, I can remember sitting in the car and just crying every single morning driving to work, thinking, like, you know, I need my mum. I'm pregnant. I don't know what to expect to be a mum. Work not being very good, and I was just crying every single morning. And I can remember my partner with me at the time. He'd come to work. I think he was dropping me off, actually, and I burst down in tears, to the point where I was just like, I can't physically do it anymore. I haven't got the energy, I haven't got the emotional state to deal with life anymore. And at that point, when I said that mentally, I haven't got the energy to deal with life anymore, is when I took action, because it took me straight back to that moment of, I said I'd never put myself in that situation. Quite emotional. And And then from that moment on, I decided to take maternity leave early because, you know, they wanted me out and I didn't want to be there. So I took maternity leave early. And then I sought alternative therapies. You know, I didn't want to go to medication. I didn't believe in what medication had to offer. I didn't want to go to counselling. I wanted something that could kind of really turn my mindset around. So I looked up hypnotherapy for some reason. Something, you know, drew me to hypnotherapy. Yeah. And I went and saw this incredible woman that in, you know, 50 minutes explained to me how my mind had been working and what I needed to do to step away from that. And in that moment is when I then got the understanding of how my mum had been feeling for however many years.
Yeah.
And then that's the work that I did then. I worked with my hypnotherapist for, I think, 6 or 7 sessions. And she completely changed my life around. But yeah, in those very few weeks, it was very, very bleak, difficult, emotional, hard time.
Yeah, which it would be, and no one can ever imagine what it's like, as you've said, until you're in that situation. There's no preparation for it, so I really do appreciate you sharing that, because I can see the emotion and I want to give you a virtual hug. But it was in that dark time, at that lowest, that you suddenly were reminded of that promise that you'd made to yourself, and that's when you seek to get help. You mentioned just in that first initial session that the lady that you were working with gave you an insight into, like, made sense of everything that had been going on. Did that give you comfort, or did that, how did that make you feel? Because it could go one of two ways.
Yeah, it gave me massive comfort. And I think knowledge is power. You know, we've got something that's so incredibly powerful to us, which is our brain. And, you know, unless we fully understand it, we don't know how to use it to its best optimum level. We don't know how to necessarily understand, you know, why we feel the way that we do and the actions that we take daily. And for her to just kind of put it down on paper and say, look, it's not your fault. The way you've been feeling is a result of X, Y, and Z. This is how your mind's working. You know, it's a buildup of all life's experiences that have got you to this breaking point. You know, the things that you may be not doing that you should do more of, all of those kind of things. So I found it incredibly comforting, because as soon as you have knowledge, you have the power. And once you have the power, you can start to change things for the better.
Totally. I love that. And it's so true. And, you know, and from that, from those sessions that you had, those 6 or 7 sessions, you've now gone on to become a hypnotherapist, and gone on to help thousands of other people. What was your motivation behind being the client to becoming the hypnotherapist?
If I had have known what I know now, my mum would potentially still be alive. And if I know what I know now and I could have helped save her, then I can help many other women around the world.
Wow. That's powerful. That's totally powerful. And an amazing thing to discover. And, you know, it's in those moments, isn't it, that people either use their experiences to go on and help others, or they use it to define them. You know, I'm a massive believer that your past doesn't define your future, and that everything does happen for a reason. And it's what you do in those dark moments. You know, I've experienced dark moments, not in the same way as you, but it's in those moments that you have that choice. And it is that choice that will then decide what path you then take. And it's owning that choice and recognizing that you can continue to choose again and to keep choosing until it feels right for you.
Yeah.
And that we're not just limited to that one choice. You know, there are unlimited choices out there. Just grab them and do with them what feels right for you.
Absolutely.
So talk me through that process then. So obviously you made that choice that you wanted to be in a position to help others so they never had to essentially go through a similar experience as yourself. One that I totally relate to. But what did that then mean to you moving forward to get you to where you are right now?
I think, like you say, once you kind of make that choice then manifests into lots of different other areas and lots of ideas. So there was my business kind of now has many facets where I recognize some of the key things in my mum in terms of how entrepreneurial she was and stuff like that when she was at her best self.
Yeah.
And I really want to help women that are in that position where they've taken the courage, that leap of faith to make that business happen and support them. And then in addition to that, I've got that I don't ever want to have women feel the way that I did, how my mum felt, all of those kind of things. So how I got to that is literally after those 6-7 sessions that I had with this lady, I had that initial thought. My son was still in my belly, all of these kind of things. And it was just like, I've got to do something about it. I don't want to live a mediocre life anymore. I've lost my mum. I've got an amazing son that's waiting to come out and see me. If only I knew how amazing he was when he actually came, would be incredible. Yeah. I want to provide a life for my son and be there for him the way that my mum wasn't. So as soon as I had those 6-7 sessions, I looked into it, researched, and he was 4 months old. And I went to the interview. I applied to go on the course. I went for the interview. And I studied whilst I was on maternity leave, basically. And then the day that I was due to go back to work, I handed in my notice. I continued to study. And then I qualified. And then from that moment on, you know, I did everything I could in my power to kind of share my message and put myself out there in helping everyone and anyone that I could, really.
Yeah.
So maternity leave at that stage was a godsend.
Totally. And you know, the motivation of your son, who you were yet to meet, to provide this amazing relationship with, an environment for him to grow, it takes courage, and it is incredible what you do. And you've touched on the brain, and you are known as the brain witch. You're not just a mindset coach. You really understand the brain, and you help other people to understand the brain. And I think when it comes to mindset, it is a very, very powerful thing. Mm. It's powerful in both positive and negative. It can lead us down tremendous paths, but it also down paths of destruction. That all begins with that choice. And hearing your story and hearing the emotion in your story, having come so far, it shows that it's all right to still feel those emotions and that they will always be there, but they're not defining you in the way that they could have. And it's okay to have those emotions and to still be, you know, touched by them, because you're never going to fully get over something like that. No. Of course you're not. You know, she was your mum. It was an incredibly hard situation to be in, but you've chosen to not let it define you and to surrender to those emotions when they come up, understand why they do, but to use them down that positive path, that path of inspiring others, of helping others, and sharing your experience, because it is an incredible one. And it is one that hopefully a lot of people can not necessarily relate to, because every story is unique, but mental illness is growing. It's out there. It's out there and it's going to affect people that we know. And the more that we can understand it, and the more that we can recognize that it's not a personal attack on those loved ones that are living with that person. And it's not a choice that they're making either. It's that choice that's been taken from them. And when we see those glimmers of light and of hope, that's when they're really kind of shining through. Yeah. And knowing that there is help out there that can support you in that. What have you learned the most as you as a person, firstly, but also you as a business lady?
Whoa, good question.
That you're amazing.
Not that I like to blow my own trumpet or anything. No, I think Resilience. I think even when we feel like we're at rock bottom, and I've had my times in business, you know, this isn't being a quick fix. This in itself, setting up my own business and really following through with my mission and my passion, has been an incredible journey, challenging journey. You know, in terms of the debt that I've accrued as a result of me following my passion, you know, the strain that it's had on family, all of those kind of things. But it's the resilience, it's having the understanding that no matter how hard and difficult and dark some days may feel, we all have the power of choice. We all have the power to pick ourselves back up again and start again. And we don't give ourselves enough credit for just how resilient we are as human beings. Like, we really, really don't. And, you know, we can give up. We can easily give up. But trusting yourself to know that you can do a good job and having that resilience in place to keep pushing you forward would be the biggest thing I've learned. I've learned that I can do far more than I ever anticipated that I could do on my own. And we all have that power of choice.
Totally. You know, choice is key. Choice is totally key. And making your goals bigger than the fears, which we spoke about at the beginning of this interview. But also that comes with choice too, because you're choosing to make your goals bigger than your fears.
Yeah.
And so, you know, choice is massive. It's the one thing that's never taken from us unless we allow someone to take it from us. And when you realize that, because for years I didn't realize that, I thought I'd lost that power within myself because of my past, and existed and almost sort of went, and I've never been a conformist, but went along with what I thought I needed to do to be this person that people expected me to be. And it's not until you recognize that actually you have that choice, that life is 10% what happens and 90% how you choose to respond to it, that suddenly everything kind of makes sense. And for people, that one choice could just be to seek help or to not give up, you know, and then that one choice leads on to another, to another, and then momentum builds.
It's having the understanding that we can't, as humans, control life's events. We can't control what happens to us. We can't control other people's actions. But what we can control, what we can always control, is our choice and how we move and grow from that situation. You know, you can have the exact same traumatic experience happen to two people with both the same opportunities, and one ends up giving in to what's happened to them, and they turn into an alcoholic, or they, you know, let those circumstances define them, like you quite rightly said. Or, you know, that person that has that same choice decides to make what happened to them become their strength and chooses not to let those circumstances define you, you know, define them. And that's the one thing, like you said, nothing, no one can ever take that choice away from you, but you have to believe that you have that power to make the choice.
Totally. Speaking of that belief, you know, I just asked them with regards to how has it changed you as a person. You mentioned that for a while, for a good few years, you felt unlovable and not worthy. Obviously, you've come a long way, and you know, in your business, you've just spoken about that resilience is something that you've learned about yourself. How have you learned to handle those limiting beliefs that we so many people carry around with them, whether it's through, you know, the trauma of losing a loved one or any life-defining event? What advice can you offer to help people to move beyond that? Because that choice of believing is so true, but it has to start with something. So what does that start with for you?
I think, again, knowledge is power. We have to understand that the beliefs that we have about ourselves are predominantly created through conditioning, through what we've seen, through what we've heard, through what we've experienced firsthand, through what other people have experienced. And just because we have those belief systems that have been kind of put upon us doesn't mean that we can't rewrite our new beliefs about ourselves. And I think that's the issue, you know, because we're so conditioned to believe certain things based on what we've heard, but based on what we've seen, based on everything in between, whether it be teachers, peers, all of those kind of things, we believe all of those beliefs then to be 100% true. Those beliefs are true in our mind. But for everyone and anyone listening, you have the power to rewrite your story. You have the power to rewrite the beliefs that you now choose to want to believe about yourself. So I think knowledge is its power in understanding what limiting beliefs you currently have, how you've been conditioned, you know, what you've seen, what you've heard, all of those kind of things, and getting really familiar with actually 90% of the stuff you feed yourself in your brain isn't actually coming from you, it's from everyone else.
Yeah.
How you want to feel about yourself. You know, I am lovable. I am an amazing mum. I am an amazing partner. I do give my best as far as my clients are concerned. And I've had to consciously rewrite those things that I want to believe in myself. And it's taken a lot of conscious discipline. But for anyone listening, I'd say, you know, again, you've got the choice to make that decision in order to rewrite your story, rewrite those beliefs, cultivate how you want to be feeling about yourself and make it happen. And make it a daily practice, because you make it a daily practice and you believe those things, your life changes in the most miraculous ways.
100%. What are your go-to techniques to help with that? Because for me, I do a lot of tapping exercise, tapping as an EFT exercise. I've done journaling, I've done meditations. It's evolved as I've evolved as a person. Do you have any go-tos when you are feeling that vulnerability or that overwhelm kicking in again?
I'd say three main go-tos, four main go-tos actually, and that's as a result of learning everything that I did from my hypnotherapist at the time. Positive activity, so whether that is taking myself out and going out for a walk for 5-10 minutes, whether it's going to the gym, whether it's, you know, doing something that is positive in terms of activity, positive interaction, mm-hmm. and positive thinking. So positive thinking can be made up of me just, you know, thinking, oh my God, I'm, you know, so grateful for the sun shining, or look at my amazing sun smile, or, you know, just being consciously aware of those things. And then positive interaction, you know, how do you speak to people? How often are you smiling at people? So many people that suffer with depression have their heads down, don't make eye contact, don't speak to anyone. And it's positive interaction, which is hugely key to creating those feel-good chemicals that we need to take us out of that place. So if I ever feel myself getting overwhelmed, or, you know, I start to feel vulnerable or more stressed out than what I like to feel, then usually it's because I've dropped one of those three crucial practices. And then I think, right, what can I do today in order to make sure that that is a non-negotiable again? And the fourth thing is hypnosis, meditations, all of those kind of things. You know, listening to that, feeding your mind with those positive things that you need to hear in order to, you know, work from your best optimum level. Journaling, I still do. So I do journaling in the morning, you know, I do affirmations, but I'd say that three things are crucially important to my go-tos.
Totally. For me, I love just putting on some music and dancing like no one's watching.
Oh, I love that as well.
Like no one can hear, because no one would want to hear my singing. But it's so emotive, isn't it, music? And it is the one thing. And also, you know, forcing a smile on your face and standing in front of the mirror. So hard to be really down when you've got a smile on.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's cultivating those things, isn't it? And aren't you a brilliant singer when you're singing on your own?
Oh, amazing. I often say, oh, hello, Wembley. Lost in the moment, like I'm Adele or a chick. Really, I'm some drowning cat. But anyway, but yeah, it is so important, isn't it, to have that shift and to move your body. Quite often when we're feeling vulnerable or overwhelmed or just low on ourselves, we go in on ourselves. I certainly find that my body kind of bends over a little bit, and your language and everything becomes so much more closed.
Yeah.
The minute you move and get rid of that stagnant energy, it totally shifts, and then you're preparing yourself to then revisit what you need to and to move yourself out of that low energy.
Yeah, and I think also the very thing that keeps us in that place, the very thing that makes us feel good, are the very things that we stop to do when we start to feel bad. Totally. So it's about having that conscious discipline to make sure that they are non-negotiables, regardless of how good you're feeling, because actually making them non-negotiables ensure that you never slip down to that place where you have to constantly be bringing yourself back up again. And physiology and all of those kind of things are incredibly powerful. You know, a smile, a dance, all of those kind of things. Like you say, it gets rid of the stagnant energy and creates new energy.
Totally. And the non-negotiables, I made a promise to myself 2 years ago to create non-negotiables. And it took a while to adjust to it, but they are now exactly what they say on the tin. They are non-negotiables, and I won't compromise on that. And I feel really good about that. And it's giving yourself that permission to feel good about putting yourself first, because quite often we don't, especially women tend not to do so as much as perhaps men do. No criticism, but it's we're wired. It's been amazing speaking to you, Sam. Is there any advice that you can give anyone who perhaps is going through similar or mental illness issues, or anyone that really wants to create a change and start to put themselves first and make that choice?
Yeah, I think the answer is twofold. I think for anyone that is really severely suffering with any form of mental illness, whether it be depression, whether it be anxiety or anything else, as dark as those dark days may seem, there is always an option to come out of that darkness. It just requires you to be open to receiving new knowledge on how you can step away from that. And I think that's one of my biggest missions with what I do is, you know, whilst I appreciate medication is crucially important for some mental illnesses, I think it's too much of a go-to for many. And actually, we are fully in control of creating, you know, those feel good neurotransmitters and all of those kind of things. So just know that if you are in that place, that it just takes that one choice to decide to step out of where you are, to seek that help in a different way, and your life can start to change. And I think the other answer in terms of kind of, you know, women feeling good and putting themselves first, which is something that I touch on so often, and quite rightly with what you said, is often that we only allow ourselves to look or feel good as a result of having achieved something. So when I speak to women in business and I speak to them about, you know, how would you look and feel if your business was where you wanted it to be? Well, you know, I'd be wearing makeup, I'd do my hair, I'd be dressing well, I'd be doing all of these kind of things, I'd be standing tall. And the thing is, doing all of those things first get you to where you want to be quicker. We have to cultivate how we want to be feeling in order to become the person that we want to be. So put yourself first, wear that lipstick if you want to wear it, do your hair, stand tall, practice walking around the house, standing tall, dance into music, all of those kind of things. Because if you step into that place and that energy, that's ultimately going to help you get to where you want to be. And it's also going to send your brain the message that you are important. You are worthy of all of the things that you desire.
Love it. Brilliant. Thank you so much. I've just got one last question for everyone. And that is, what is your mindset mantra?
Oh, what's my
mindset?
Yeah, God, my mindset mantra. I mean, anything's possible. Anything's possible. Feel the fear, do it anyway.
Yeah.
You're capable of great things. Honestly, I've got a book of what I tell myself on a daily basis.
Behind me, you'll flip the switch.
Yeah, flip your switch. You know, you've got the capability. It doesn't. Yeah, you know, anything is possible. Anything you put your mind to is possible. We've all got that capability, that power. So, they're the kind of things that I tell myself daily. Feel the fear, do it anyway, is probably one of my biggest things, because we can't eradicate fear. It's always going to be there. That's the way that our brain is designed, but we can take action despite the fear, and that's where the magic happens.
Totally. Sam, it's been amazing. Thank you so much. I'm going to add your links into the show notes so people can contact you if they want to find out more or follow you on Instagram and on Facebook. That I really, really appreciate your honesty and your rawness, and allowing me to talk so personally about your mum. So thank you so much. It's been amazing having you on the show, and I hope everyone's enjoyed it. So
thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been amazing. And I'm sure that I'll bring you back, because there's so much more that we could go into aside of that from a mindset point of view that could really help other people. So thanks ever so much. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
And I hope you enjoyed the show. Bye for now. That's all for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review. Bye for now.